You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where if Elon Musk built a tunnel under our town, we'd take it. I'm your host, Justin Lesneski, the hopeful bromantic, and I'm glad you joined us this week. I think this week that we witnessed a lot of actual evil, and I think it's important for us to not use that word lightly, first of all. I'm not using that word lightly, but it's important for us to talk about it, talk about what it is, identify it, and talk about how do we deal with it, because I think that there's a lot of serious stuff going on. So to talk about it, I'm going to bring in my co-host here, joining me this trip from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. And if you're playing the midside drinking game, take a shot because I'm going to talk about the puppy. Got to take him to the dog park this week for the first time. It was tons of fun. He got bullied. I'm going to file a hate crime report, but he had a great time.
How does a dog get bullied?
Well, because he's a little puppy and he's very, you know, he wants to play, but then he's very submissive. So at a certain point, he was hiding under the bench. And this dog was trying to play with him and get him to come out. And he was not happy with it. And then, of course, I get him out of the situation. We're running around somewhere else. And then he runs right back into the mix with all of the big dogs. So to the same result.
So it sounds to me like the real crime is that you're raising your puppy to be a pussy.
Well, I don't know that I would describe him that way, especially with the sharpness of his teeth, but, I don't know. I'll let you decide if you ever, if they ever let you back into California.
Yeah, I'm just kidding around. It's interesting. I've never raised a dog. I've never seen a dog go from that small to, you know, being bigger. So I don't know at what point they stop being submissive or things like that. So it's interesting. And I also don't know. I mean, this is a conversation that's up for debate with humans, right? Nurture versus nature. I don't know how much that plays into the raising of pets either. I mean, that's something I've thought about constantly with, you know, River and Echo and now just Echo, because Echo's different now that River's gone. So that's all very interesting to me.
Yeah, I'm definitely trying to get, while he's young and a lot of this is more malleable, get him socialized as much as possible.
Are you allowed? Dogs can't spread COVID yet?
I don't know, but, this just in, as of Friday, we can have gatherings of 50 people in Long Beach, only outdoors, and only if they're wearing masks, and only if you eat in designated eating areas. But you can have your mask off while you're drinking. I think you can drink in non-designated areas, but you can only eat in designated eating areas.
But even though it's outside, you have to wear your masks.
Yes.
That's something that Dr. Drew's talked about a bunch. And it's interesting. It's interesting that Long Beach is opening up. California said they're going to open up June 15th. And yeah. I think that this is all related to one of the
opening
major
up,
topics.
There's opening up and then there's opening up. I mean, I don't want any of our listeners in California to get their hopes up. I'm kind of in between my work and my business. I kind of know what the shakedown of some of the rules are. And at least where they stand right now, they say opening up, but that's not really what's going to happen. Workspaces need to be 6 feet apart. You have to wear your mask all the time. If you have above a certain number of employees, you have to implement contact tracing. So there's a prospect of going to the office and wearing a tracker so that, you know, if in case you come in contact with someone, you can notify them that they've come in contact with COVID.
I mean, none of that surprises me, but it's still the fact that California is using that lingo at all and they are relaxing the rules is a stark contrast from another country. And that's crazy that California is not as bad anymore. They're not the extreme anymore. So let's talk about some stuff going on in the world. Take a good look around. This life really sucks.
Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should
As always, if you would like to support the show, you can do so through Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. We appreciate any and all support, including affirmations. So you can send those our way, too. That's themidside.com/Patreon, themidside.com/Locals. William, before we get into the stuff about Canada and we get into the stuff about the rhetoric around the climate, I want to talk about something that bugs me but isn't quite as serious, because I don't want to like start with like, oh my God, Canada, and then go into something that's like not as serious. So I want to follow up on a topic here that I've talked about on the Midside a lot. And it was something that I was curious about, like if I moved to Florida, if things would change. And it's the backing into parking spaces thing, man. Like, it's so common now, and almost everyone is doing it. I would say a large percentage of people is doing it. I think it's getting worse. I think more people are doing it. And I don't know. I haven't been convinced. I know one of the people who was really for it was one of the listeners we lost. I've had other people tell me why they do it, and I get it when it comes to trucks, but I'm still not convinced
that
it's not narcissistic.
That wasn't the reason they left, just so everyone knows. I mean, they didn't leave because they lost the debate about backing into parking spaces.
How awesome would that have been, though? Triggered!
Triggered!
Should get that sound effect. Get that drop.
Okay.
But, it wasn't because of that. I am trying to draw sort of a correlation, though, between, like, oh my God, I could die from COVID. Oh my God, I back into my parking spots. I just think it's narcissistic. It's sort of like, oh, well, I can take the time to back into a parking spot. So, I mean, for instance, this is what just happened to me, right? So I was in a parking lot and I was driving through it, and there were two cars in front of me. The first was like a giant like party bus / van. I don't think it was actually literally a party bus. It just looked like that. And I think they had rented it to drive down to Florida to go to Disney World. Well, they start backing into a parking spot. So the car behind them starts backing up. So I honk my horn. They're still backing up. So I have to lay on the horn to get them to stop. They almost hit me. Then after the big van backs into the spot, the car backs into the spot. Now, this whole process took an extra 5 minutes that it didn't have to take if people just pulled into spots. And that's, it seems to me it's the same way elsewhere in driving too. I don't know if you've experienced this at all, William, but I've noticed that like if I try to back out of my parking spot, nobody waits for me anymore. When I was younger, you would back out and people would say, oh, this person's backing out, that's dangerous for them, I'm going to slow down. But now somebody sees you backing out of a parking spot and they speed up to try and get around you because they don't want to wait for you to back up. It seems to me that when driving now, everybody, and this is the same California, Florida, right? The only place I didn't really experience this was driving across the country when I was in smaller towns. But then again, I wasn't there for long. I was just passing through. So who knows? But it seems to me that people's MO when driving, people's perspective when driving is everybody else is in my way and I need to get around them as quickly as possible.
Well, other people are anything from a mild irritant to a obstacle to be overcome, right? That's the mindset that's going on. Although, Justin, I have a confession to make. I back in to my garage from the street almost every time that I come into my garage.
Okay,
this might be the end of the podcast right here.
Here's the thing. That's your garage.
Yeah, but I'm blocking the street. I mean, it's taking me longer to pull in, right?
Let me ask you this. How often do you do it when there are other cars around?
I usually wait for the other cars to go around.
Ah, see the difference?
Yeah. There's a rare occasion, like if it's like 5 o'clock on a weekday, I just have to like execute it as quickly as possible because people like to use my side residential street as a way to get around some traffic. So I have to do it quickly or I will be pummeled.
Right. So part of the problem is that. But I'm specifically talking about like if you're in a Walmart parking lot and somebody's like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to back into this spot. Like, really? You're fucking going to Walmart. Like, just park, get in, get out. I mean, I've started adapting back. And what I mean by that is, it wasn't until I lived in California, William, that I started being like, I need to get the closest parking spot. Because, again, there's a lot of people, you start seeing them as an obstacle and you want the least nuisances, right? Now I've started adapting back to something I talked to Daniel about, and he was the one who suggested it, and I was like, yeah, just park in the first parking spot you find. Doesn't matter how close it is, how far it is, just park and walk. That's going to be the most convenient. And you know what? It is for me. In Walmart, you can be worried about parking near the front, or you can just drive to the back of the parking lot, park, and walk, and you're going to deal with a lot less stress that way. But it seems like everybody, in the same sense,
you don't get
the
little Xbox achievement, parking unlocked thing. You don't get the little notification that you've achieved the ideal parking spot for the whole, like, 2 seconds. That little dopamine hit that you got the perfect spot.
Ah, see, isn't that what it is? That's the narcissism, right? Oh, I got the best spot. Because even the idea of ideal, right, when we're talking about what the ideal spot is here, isn't the ideal spot the one that gets you in and out of the store the quickest or makes your experience the least cumbersome?
Yeah, yeah.
So is the ideal spot where you have to fight everyone in the front? You have to fight the people that are walking in and out of the store? You have to fight the cars that are going slow in the front? And, William, I didn't see this in California. It happens more in Florida. But there are the people who love to, A, stop and let everyone out first before they park, because it's inconvenient for everybody else in your car to walk to the store. And B, who like to sit in the front of the store and wait for people to get out of it rather than park. Oh, well, I'm not out of my car, so I can be here because I'm still in my car.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm battling. My older dog is chasing a fly right now, so I only caught like 50% of that. But I too am very very annoyed by the dropping people off at the front, especially because when I was growing up, my grandmother was handicapped, right? She could walk all right with her cane, but you know, she had a handicap parking and everything, but we would rarely use the handicap parking as long as we could drop her off the front. But you would see a line, especially during like the holidays, of people like just dropping people off the front. And you're just like, wow, there's so many people here. So many people here that are, just being incredibly lazy. I mean, maybe you're trying to avoid the cold, you know, Michigan weather. I can kind of understand it, but, yeah. That was always my thing. I was like, wow, especially because there's a bunch of parking spaces available and you're just like, what? You're saving yourself like 5 feet.
Right. It's what you said. It's the dopamine hit, right? It's the idea that, oh, I'm doing myself a service by making it more convenient for me. But actually this convenience is making life worse for you because you're training yourself in the long run to not want to experience any adversity at all. Right. It's so bad for me to have to pull out of a parking spot normally, right? Oh, I need to be able to drive out of my parking spot, not back out of it.
I might get a call, you know? They need backup, and I need to peel out of the parking lot.
Right, exactly. I don't know. It's just something I'm noticing more and more, and I think it's just an example of the narcissism in our culture. And I know there was a lot of pushback on me when I brought this up previously on the show, but I'm just seeing it everywhere. I mean, I'm also seeing, William, people aren't stopping at stop signs anymore. And what I mean by that is they slow down and they just keep going slowly through it because they're waiting for you to pass so they can continue to go because it's inconvenient for them to come to a full stop. But the problem with that is I don't literally know they're going to stop. Like, yeah, I trust the stop sign, but at the same time, if I see your car in motion, I have to be extra cautious because I don't know, like, are you going to stop? Like, have you just decided you're not going to? Or is there something wrong and, like, you're going to hit me? Like, so we end up in this weird sort of game of chicken. It's like, do I hit the gas to try and gun it past them and hope they don't hit me? Or do I go slow and hope they don't roll into me? Do you
I
get
think
what
you
I'm
get
saying?
One of those giant, like the trains have, the cattle pushers. You just plow through Mad Max style.
Well, that's where we're inevitably headed to.
No,
I mean, look,
I think,
get it. If there's no one around and there's a red light, I don't care if you go through it. If there's no one around and there's a stop sign, and I don't care if you go through it. But if there's people around and you're not stopping at all.
Yeah, it's I mean, there's the I don't care. There's the carelessness of doing something that is inherently risky, probably the riskiest thing people do throughout the day, and just being so cavalier with it. It says something about how humans kind of think about risk in general.
Right. That's interesting. I agree with you. It's the riskiest thing people do every day. Do you think it's, and I think this sort of goes into the next topic I want to talk about. Do you think it's, I'm struggling to put words to it. It's like the appearance, the illusion of safety. You know what I mean? So you're in this vehicle that, like, it feels like it'd be really hard to hurt you in the vehicle, and you have a seatbelt on. So it's like you have this feeling of power because, like, the safety is, or the danger rather is like one step removed from where you are. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think there's totally something to that. I mean, there's it's kind of an apocryphal story now, but there's all this data about, you know, once you mandate bicycle helmets, not only do the bicyclists behave more dangerously, but the drivers around them are do things that are more dangerous, like ride closer to the bicyclist and things like that. So the people overestimate the compensating controls effectiveness, right? Like the helmet makes it slightly safer for your head injury, but it could make it overall more dangerous by everyone sort of thinking, oh, it's safer, so we can take more risk in other areas.
Exactly. And I think that sort of points to something that I think overall culturally, or maybe it's the human race. I don't know if it's a result of our philosophies, our education system, our culture. I mean, maybe it's all of the above, but it just seems like people are more short term rather than long term. I think that's one of the reasons that people reject objectivism, because they think it's going to be like selfishness in the short term, where it has to be selfishness in the long term. And what I mean by that is they see selfishness as like, yeah, I'm going to dick everyone over and get what's mine in the moment, right? I'm going to always back into my parking spots, right? They see it as, I basically say, they see it as narcissism. I see narcissism as short term selfishness, where really it's long term. And I think we're really seeing that, William, the short term, long term thing in COVID. And I mean, the starkest example right now is Canada. Did you see what's going on with Canada?
I believe they became a fascist state.
They 100% became a fascist state. I'm going to read a few paragraphs here of what is going on in Canada. It is fucking mind-blowing. And it is mind-blowing to me, William, that nobody is like standing up and being like, this is wrong. Ontario, which, you know, the province, will step up enforcement powers for police and extend its stay-at-home order to a minimum of 6 weeks in a bid to stem the exponential rise in COVID-19 cases, but won't institute paid sick days, despite modeling showing that cases will remain high through the summer without additional support for essential workers. Speaking at a twice-delayed news conference on Friday, Premier Doug Ford also announced that non-essential construction will be shut down and outdoor amenities like golf and playgrounds will be restricted. Outdoor gatherings with people outside a person's household will be prohibited effective 12:01 a.m. Saturday, which is yesterday when we're recording this. Effective 12:01 a.m. Monday, which is today when you're listening. Capacity at religious gatherings, weddings, and funerals will be limited to 10 people. Also beginning Monday, and this is where, William, this is where it just fucking goes off the rails for me. This is insane. Ford said there will be checkpoints at provincial borders with Quebec and Manitoba with exceptions for essential travel. Police will also have the authority to ask anyone outside their residence to indicate their purpose for leaving home and provide their address. What? What? Anyone? I'm going to repeat that. Police will have the authority to ask anyone outside their residence to indicate their purpose for leaving home and provide their address. That includes stopping vehicles and potentially issuing tickets of approximately $750, which, I don't know, is that like 10 cents American? Inspectors will also... That's interesting that it says $750. I didn't realize this is from a Canadian news site, CBC, but it uses the dollar symbol. But wouldn't...
That, okay. The Canadian dollar uses the dollar symbol. There's no Canadian dollar symbol.
There should be a Canadian dollar. That's very confusing. It's very confusing.
What would it be? Look like a loony?
Yeah. Just make it look like a bird. Write the S sign, but it's the bird's neck. Come on, Canadians. Come on. Inspectors will also visit law offices, accounting firms, and other such locations to check that only essential workers are in the building. I mean, look, Gina Carano, right, got in trouble for that meme that was like saying, oh, when the Holocaust did that, blah, blah, blah. But when you start saying police can stop anyone for any purpose and they can go into buildings to check for people, does that not sound, that I'm going to get canceled here, does that not sound like the Nazis checking for Jews? Does that not sound like ICE checking for illegal immigrants? I mean, there's rules here.
Justin, women and minorities hardest hit. What about the black people and all these cop interactions? Won't this lead to death?
I don't know if you saw me tweet that, but I was like, who in their right mind, after seeing all the news stories of the past year, is like, you know what? Let's give the police more powers to stop and accost people.
Well, and also, this is Ontario, right? This is Toronto. Like, yes. What happened to stop Asian hate?
Because there's a lot of Asians in Toronto?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think this is racist or anything, right? This is against everybody. Because the other stuff is...
Hold on. Then I guess... I disagree, Justin. Here's
okay,
why.
Go ahead.
With the current logic of that we need to abolish the police and all this other bullshit. And the reason, the justification is that all police are racist. Therefore, if you give police these powers, they will only use them on minorities, according to their logic. So therefore, this law is racist. Right?
That's not possible. Canadians are too polite to be racist.
They're just very polite about their racism. It's the soft racism.
So I'm going to ask you, are you being serious or are you making fun of them?
I'm both at the same time. That's the farce of it. Both at the same time.
Because so you think it's potentially possible that they are using the line of thinking you're thinking and then saying, yeah, do it because it'll get rid of the minorities?
Well, no. What I'm thinking, what I think will happen is, like with anything, anytime we talk about, like, we are going to throw more government at the problem that government caused, I think that they will use this. Here's what's going to happen. The law is going to go out. People are going to protest. The people who are going to resist are going to be, for the most part, going to be poor folks, right? Because they have things to do, right, to survive. They're the ones who are going to resist the most. And then, of course, your Karens, but whatever. So what you're going to have is you're going to have an increase in police interactions, negative police interactions, and who's that going to affect the most is women and minorities, and then they're going to blame the police when it's the law. Right, that's the problem. So I think this is a downward spiral. I mean, I think there was a video. I think it was out of Canada. I don't know if you saw it, Justin. Where, I think it was maybe an Eastern Orthodox church or something like Armenian or I don't remember exactly the ethnicity, but someone who was definitely persecuted by the Nazis, and they came in to this synagogue or church or whatever, and these were these exact Canadian sort of inspectors to say, papers please, you can't be here. And they just basically did something that the left does all the time, but this time it was effective. They just basically called them Nazis until they left. And I thought, wow, this is the first time I've seen this actually work, right? And be justified. They were actually coming in and saying that they couldn't gather and worship on Easter and or Passover. I don't remember the details of the religion that this was in. But I was like, wow, this is you're going to see more of that, I think, Justin. And then there are people that have spine, even in Canada. No offense to our handful hundreds of Canadian listeners out there.
I mean, I think the Canadians that already have have spines have already left or are working on leaving. I think that's what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Get the fuck out of Ontario. Jesus.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a law blogger that vlogger that I follow on YouTube, Viva La Fry, and he's been covering this extensively. So if anyone's interested in that, he's been talking about the erosion of rights, and he has a he has a older dog that needs to be carried around, so he just carries around the dog, defying the order, because you're allowed to walk your dog, but that's it. And he's been covering the protests. There's been protests out there. None of this has been covered in the media, and he's doing a good job of covering what people, what sort of the more spineful Canadians have to think about this. I mean, well, they have a charter of rights, and this is the time to actually say, like, does this mean anything, right?
Right, and that's the question I have.
Hey, we have the same problem here. Mark Garagos has been talking about it, not exactly a conservative, right? And he's been talking about the COVID Constitution, how the rules have just changed, and people are just saying, well, the Constitution goes to the side, and it's like, no, 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 that's not how this happens.
Well, and that's exactly it, William. I don't know the Canadian, what did you call it?
Statement Charter of Rights. Rights.
Charter was the right.
This is like junior high civics, Justin. You don't cover that in the state you grew up in Michigan.
As close like, as I
you have
was
to know, to... You have to know both American and Canadian government.
Yeah, as close as I was to Canada, and we did drive there because I do have family that lives in Orillia, which is in Ontario. My cousin's in Naples right now, though. I don't think he keeps being like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go back to Canada in like May." I'm like, "You're not going back to Canada anymore. Just stay here." He's a dual citizen, but we never learned that, so I don't know what's in it, and I don't know how close it is to the American Constitution. And I wonder, William, and maybe you, since you live so close to the border, right? You were right there, and you had to study it. Is the reason none of this has happened in the U.S. yet because of the Constitution, or is Canada's culture just so far left that it's easier for them to get away with this? Because I literally saw a tweet replying to one of these things saying, yeah, if we just do this for a little bit, we're going to be more free in the long run. So there are clearly some true believers still out there. You know, this is the country that, you know, as Jordan Peterson famously pointed out, it's illegal to mispronounce someone. So is it that our Constitution is saving us, or is it that our culture isn't that far gone yet in America?
Yeah, so I don't, it's been so long since I've thought about the California government make up the Constitution, but I will say that it's different in different provinces, and Toronto in particular, and Ottawa as well. It is very woke and very leftist. But you have interesting forces, because right on the border there, you have Montreal and you have the whole Quebec and that whole sort of independence, right, spirit. And so it is an interesting sort of melting pot, the politics there. And it's not something I know a lot about in recent time. But I think that it's very different in different provinces. I think the danger here is, because this is in Ontario... And Ottawa's in Ontario. This could spread Canada wide, right?
Yeah, like a real virus, like the real virus, like the real pandemic.
Yeah, losing your rights as a virus.
Right, that's 100% what it is. I mean, have you heard about, to go back to some of the concretes, have you heard about the travel thing? That if you leave, like when you come back, you have to pay a fine, and like you have to, they literally quarantine you for a certain amount of days. And they put you, like, they call it like a center right now, but they're, and this is a midsider in Toronto was telling me about this, that they're hotels right now, but they're literally building areas to put people who come back into Canada in. I mean, it's like camps at this point, and they're finding them. So this goes back to the rich poor thing you were talking about. And this is the California thing as well, right? A lot of these rules, any law in California, is really just made to get more money from the rich. And that's what it is. It's just that when these people travel, they're just going to factor in this extra time and this extra money into their travel plans if they're that rich.
Yeah, I think they're doing the same thing in Ireland, where you have to hole up in a hotel and it's at your expense. And of course, I'm sure they're getting bargain basement prices for the... for this. It sounds very much like a travel industry sort of grift, right? Like, we know we're hurting this travel industry, so we're going to, you know, have this completely irrational. Because what's the difference of quarantining in a hotel room and quarantining in your house, right? There's no difference.
Oh, 100%. It reeks of corporatism. I mean, it's just like the vaccine here, right? I mean, William, I find it very funny that the vaccine that only has one dose is the one that is deemed too dangerous because six people have died from blood clots. Whereas after that one is banned, right, the Johnson & Johnson one was banned for that reason, and it was only one dose. Then Pfizer starts saying, oh, you're going to need a third dose, and then you're going to need to redose annually. So they take the one off the market that works in one shot, and they keep the ones on the market that are going to need more shots and shots every year. That to me feels like the government picking winners and losers. Am I being paranoid?
I think it gets back to that risk discussion, certainly taking advantage of the fact that it's easier to see the six people that have died of something than the millions of people that will die because the vaccine isn't out fast enough, sort of thing, right? Like this is not that there will be millions of people that die from today on, because I think we'll have to go back to our original predictions. What was it? What was the original prediction at the beginning of the pandemic? What percent of the population was going to be? It wasn't quite decimated. What was it supposed to be? 6%?
Oh,
of world population?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that. I thought you were saying what I said. No, you're saying this, the WHO prediction? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So I think we're still below that, safely below that level.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything you said there, but I was asking about the corporatism. Like, do you think they're taking advantage of what you just said to play favorites and take Johnson & Johnson off the market? Or do you think that that's a legitimate, just legitimate irrationality?
I think it's just legitimate irrationality. It's just a thing.
Okay, well, we'll leave that one up to the midsiders out there to think about. I think that's an interesting discussion. Next thing I wanted to talk about that was crazy was, did you see this article from the Scientific American, William?
I took a look at it. What did you find interesting about this one?
So this article is saying that we're living in a climate emergency and we're going to say so. So their argument is that the rhetoric of calling it climate change, and remember, climate change changed because global warming wasn't a good enough term anymore. Now we have to call it a climate emergency because we have to identify what is actually going on. That is terrifying to me. This is the control of language to set the cultural conversation, and they know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. And there's nothing better to demonstrate that than at the bottom of the article. At the bottom of the article, it says, what does it say here? Hold on, I'm scrolling down. This is an opinion and analysis article. So we're supposed to take this as, oh, this is the truth, this is reality. But then at the article, they put a small disclaimer at the bottom. This is an opinion and analysis article. And really briefly, just a side note, I noticed some of the readings for the past like 30 seconds to a minute were kind of hot on my mic, and now it went back down. So listeners, I'm going to try and pull that part out and lower it, but it may sound distorted for about a minute there. So I'm sorry if that happened. I accidentally hit my phone as I was looking at the outline on my mic stand, and I think it messed up my mic somehow, but it seems to have normalized itself. So I just want to apologize to the listeners for that. Go ahead, William.
So the worst part for me is right here. This is a statement of science, not politics. Thousands of scientists, including James Hansen, the NASA scientist who put the problem in the public agenda in 1988, and David King and Hans whoever, former science advisors to British and German governments, respectively, have said humanity faces a climate emergency. That right there shows that it is not a statement of science. Where's the cited papers? Right? That's science doesn't work by referring to experts like this, right? Where's the peer-reviewed stuff declaring it an emergency? And not only it would need to be not only papers in climate science, right? Like solid climate science. It would need to be in public policy as well. You would need to have cited papers in both of those to draw this conclusion scientifically.
Well, right, and that's the irony of the last. See, now my mic's hot again. I don't know what is going on with my mic right now. Very strange. Okay, I just turned. That's my volume. Ladies and gentlemen, I am not a genius.
8 years of podcasting. Still can't figure out a mic.
This is the first time. This has never happened before. This has never happened before. Okay, it seems to have returned tomorrow. I don't know what's going on. Apparently, they're trying to silence me because of what I'm talking about this. But yeah, William, it's the next sentence. Why emergency? Because words matter. But the word science doesn't matter? It's the idea that they get to control these words to mean whatever they want them to mean, and they get to manipulate reality based upon that. That's what they think they're doing. They don't want to be beholden to reality. They want to just control things anyway. And convince me this is not the case, William. I want right now you to convince me this is not the case. Did they not see what was going on with COVID? And by declaring it an emergency and declaring it a pandemic, they got to use all these, like you just said, Garagos is pointing out, the Constitution shouldn't go out the window, but it is. It's the COVID Constitution. Convince me they do not want the climate change constitution. Convince me they don't want that. Because remember, we had the article.
Well, they say
before,
it right in the next paragraph. This is based off of what happened. They've been trying to get people to give up their rights in the name of climate for a long time, right? Since the global cooling days. And it hasn't worked. And they saw what happened with COVID. And they say right here in the article, the media's response to COVID-19 provides a useful model. Guided by science, quotes mine, journalists have described the pandemic as an emergency, chronicling its devastating impacts, called out disinformation, and told audiences how to protect themselves. So we need the same commitment to the climate story. I agree that it's a story. As partners in covering climate now, a global consortium of hundreds of news outlets will present coverage in the lead up to Earth Day, April 22nd, around the team Living Through Climate Emergency. So we're going to get blitzed with this, right, through the media. First of all, who is going to... James O'Keefe just released that video, right, where they're talking about, well, we're just going to blitz on climate change because Trump's gone. But we already know that they're calling their shots here. But our friend Alex is going to have a heyday with this, right?
That he's going to make a lot of money for people who want to hear the other side. So good for him. But I mean, that's how brazen they are. That's how arrogant they are, that they can just call their shots like this and people will just accept it. Because William, we're going to have like the equivalent of brownouts across the culture. And it's going to be like, oh, on these days you can go to the supermarkets. On these days, these industries can be open. Oh, you're only allowed to go to Disney World from, you know, June till, I don't even know, December. What are they even going to do? Because you could hear it argued either way, right? Oh, well, these are the months that people most want to go there. So it's not even going to be that. You know what they're going to do? To go to any of the parks, you're going to need the reservation system where you're going to have to go through. Government's going to regulate the reservation system. So right now, Disney has like 25% capacity and you have to reserve your days ahead of time, right? It's first come, first serve. Well, government's going to start to say who can go where at what time. Oh, you can travel this time. You're going to have to get a reservation system that the government approves to do airline travel, to go to another state.
Oh, don't worry. I'll just buy offsets.
They're going to institute that as well, right? Like the California thing, right? Taxing the rich by not acting like it's a tax. Oh, well, you can just buy carbon offsets. And if you buy enough of these, then you can do that. Well, that's just, again, this is what we were just saying with the COVID thing for Canada. If you know you have to pay this extra fee when you travel.
This is a religion, right? This is exactly the way the, you know, Holy Roman Empire operated, right? This is exactly the same way where you have, you can pay to do the things you need to do, pay later for quote unquote forgiveness. So the rich can get so you can keep the rich happy, right? As part of keys to power. And then you can control everyone else. And it sounds like a good thing. to the people at the top.
But that's why it's crazy. Why are the rich happy? Because they can afford it and it gives them more access than everyone else? Oh, well, I just have to pay an extra $1,000.
I think part of it is, I mean, you always have the true believers, but I think part of it is, why do you think we see so much eat the rich rhetoric? This is what keeps them in line, right?
Keeps the rich in line?
Yeah. I mean, the mob can just go after the rich, right? We see this in Portland.
So it's literal fear for their lives?
Yeah, yeah. Who's the first to go during the Communist Revolution?
That's true. Except if you're in with the Communist Party. So I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But that's the point. That's the point of all of this, right? That's the point of bringing up the Canada thing. That's the point of this bringing up this climate emergency rhetoric is you, listener, you midsiders, and each and me and William, each of us, we have to decide where our lines are. Where our lines are. When are we done putting up with this kind of stuff? And we have to decide, you know, what the cost benefit is for ourselves, for each of us. And I'm going to tell you, I've already decided mask wise, I will not be teaching in the fall if I still have to wear a mask. I've already decided that because this has gone too far. There's no point to wearing a mask already. And for them to continue it in the fall is we're all just complicit at that point. We're all just complicit at that point. And I will not be complicit anymore. I've tried already to not wear a mask. And if they say we're going to have to wear one, I will petition. And I will say, why are we doing this? This is what the evidence shows, blah, blah. And then I'll show up without a mask and I'll see what happens. I will see what happens, but I will likely be out of a job because I am not going to accept it anymore. Because as I said at the beginning, William, have I not been clear from the beginning that I believe that they're going to try and make us wear masks for the rest of our lives?
Yeah, you did say that.
Have I been proven wrong about that yet?
I think we saw a state, was it North Dakota? Or there was a state that just passed a law for a permanent, for permanent masks. I forgot what state. I'll have to look that up.
I did not know there was a state that did that, and it would be very strange if it would be North Dakota. I would think that would be a California thing or something. Oh, well. Well, we'll leave you on that sort of sobering thought as we head into our next segment. Let's hit it, William. Put me into syndication. Broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events. In the air timeline lapse, my made-for-TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. Quick correction, it was Oregon. I should have guessed. Yeah, that makes more sense than North Dakota. I was like, what's going on? So Oregon. Oregon, did it pass?
I'm still pulling up the article. So.
Okay, well, William will let us know if it passed. And if it did pass and you're in Oregon, leave. Okay, leave. That's beyond the pale. That's beyond the veil. Whatever you want to say. Beyond the pale, beyond the veil. All right, whatever. And like I was about to say, if you want to join in on these conversations during the week, you can join our Discord channel. It's really popping off. That's where I put the trailers for Trailer Takedown. You can do so by going to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. You can click on any episode link and click on our Join Discord link. We've had some great conversation in there. So I would love to hear what you had to say, hear what you want us to talk about on the show, and just continue interacting because it's becoming that Discord channel is sort of the one area of rationality I deal with every day. So,
and I just posted the article. The proposal would keep the rules in place until they are no longer necessary to address the effects of the pandemic in the workplace. Michael Wood, administrator of the state's Department of Occupational Safety and Health, said the move is necessary to address a technicality in state law that requires a permanent rule to keep current restrictions from expiring. So, yep, it's a permanent rule now in the OSHA guideline.
So they made it a permanent rule. I love when my permanent rules are very vague and abstract as something as when it's no longer necessary. You're going to shut your mouth until it's no longer necessary. Well, when's that? How do I satisfy that? That's a very easy way to move the goalpost. Jesus. What are you doing, Oregon? Leave Oregon. Fuck you, Oregon. Okay. So, I didn't have anything that I watched this week because nothing came out in theaters. So, this morning when I woke up, I was like, I need to watch something to review for the show. So, I logged into Netflix. And, William, I don't know how often you log into Netflix. But Netflix does this thing now where they say, like, what the top 10 trending shows are or movies are. Have you seen that?
Yeah. And it's always a very strange mix of things.
Yes. Well, one of them this time was this documentary called Why Did You Kill Me? Okay? And I'm going to be very clear before I even go into this, because I don't want to really talk about this documentary. I want to talk about sort of what it reflects as a culture, that it was number 4 on Netflix. This is a solid no. So remember, the ratings are no, no bro, bro, bromantic, and so bromantic. Whereas the latter half of what I just said is the positive, and the former is the negative. So this is a solid no. And the reason this is a no is this is a completely uninteresting, cliche, trite story. And what I mean by it is this. In Riverside, California, a young woman was killed by a gang member. She was driving with her family in her car. A gang member got out of their car, shot at her car. She was hit. No one else was. She died. Now, when you dig deeper into the story, the reason they covered this is because this happened in 2006. Her young cousin set up a fake profile and then set up a fake profile of her, the woman who died, and used those fake profiles to figure out the gang member who did it, and that gang member was put away. This also involves, you know, the mother was, you know, addicted to meth, the mother of the woman who died. You know, these are all gang members. You know, all the gang members are shown to be Hispanic. They're shown to be, you know, coming from poverty, lower class. It's even said at one point they live in Riverside. These are all people who live in Riverside by one of the gang members. They live in Riverside because they couldn't afford to live in LA or Orange County. And the reason I'm saying there's nothing interesting about this story is you take people who are low class. You take people who act a certain way. You take people who are addicted to drugs. And these things happen. Am I saying they're not tragic? No, this is tragic. This story is a tragedy. It is terrible to see and look at all the people in this documentary. They look unhealthy. They speak unhealthily. There is one person in it who I look at him and I go, that guy got out. That guy bettered his life. Because you can tell by the way he carries himself, the way he dresses, and the way he talks. But everybody else, besides maybe the police member, police officer, the police detective, you can tell they're stuck in this sort of lifestyle, right? This sort of destructive, emotionalistic, whim-worshipping, low self-esteem lifestyle. So for that, it's uninteresting. And this is, William, the thing that's interesting to me about that is, one, it's number 4 on Netflix, right? Maybe people aren't watching it all the way through. I don't know how they do their metrics. But I literally only stuck through it just to have content to talk about on the show. I was like, all right, I want to see. I watched it. I was like, I want to see where they go with this. And they went with the direction of, you know, this is tragic. This is tragic. Drugs and violence are bad. Yes, drugs and violence are bad. But this is the best documentary you could come up with to tell that story. It's like naturalism as a documentary. And what's interesting to me is twofold, William. Like I just said, why are people watching this? And two, somebody says you can make a documentary for Netflix. Did Netflix give them a carte blanche? Did they give them a blank check? Or did Netflix order this kind of...
Yeah, they probably bought... It's probably already made and they bought it, right? A lot of these documentaries are made independently and then purchased by Netflix. Because I wondered the same thing. I have Apple TV Plus and... you know, one of the things I can put on the background that I really enjoy because it's nice visuals is a show they have called Earth at Night, where they use these really cool cameras that can see color in moonlight. So you can see kind of night animal activity that you normally wouldn't get to see in color, which is really cool. But there's a Netflix knockoff that Netflix purchased. I guess they must have heard that Apple was going to release this. I mean, they had kind of promoted it when they started promoting Apple TV. And so they have a what I call a knockoff, although I think it was done first, called Night on Earth or Night at Earth or something like that, that they keep promoting in my Netflix queue, oddly. That's literally just like your traditional sort of IR camera, you know, night vision, kind of the same thing, but you know, a little less visually interesting, right? But it's funny to me to see the different approaches between, like, Apple commissioned some of these and purchased some of them, right? But I think for Netflix and Amazon, it's a lot of, at least initially, they purchase an already produced documentary. And then maybe if it trends well, if it gets good metrics, then they'll ask for follow-ons, right?
Well, yeah, and I think we certainly saw that with the whole serial killer thing, right? Where we saw the boom of all the stuff covering the serial killers, which that at least makes sense to me, right? These are outliers. These are extreme events. And it's like, how does that sort of evil exist? And how does it manifest? How does it get away with it? And how does it get punished? I sort of get that story. But these kind of stories, I think that, you know, whether this one was commissioned by Netflix or not, I think they're kind of prevalent and people watch them. And that is that the question you're saying? Is that the bigger question? That even if people are making these independently and they're being bought, there are people who see a market for this kind of story.
Yeah.
So is that what you're saying? Is the bigger question is why is there a market for this
why
kind of story?
Why is there a market? Yep. Because is it part of the true crime trend, right? There's a proliferation of these true crime podcasts, right? Since COVID started, I mean it's been a trend for a while, but I think you know everyone's stuck at home now. You have all these middle-aged women listening to true crime podcasts constantly, right? And maybe that's what they're trying to tap into, that. You know, a mother's nightmare, sort of Nancy Grace sort of stories.
I get that. And I get, you know, I get the true crime for the outlying stories. But this is literally, it's not even a mother's nightmare because the mother was addicted to meth at the time. She literally said the last day I used was the day my daughter was killed. So it's like no one in the story is sympathetic. No one in the story is innocent. So I just don't get. I don't get why it would be number four trending, and I don't get why it would be interesting at all. Like, what is the value in telling a story like this? Why would there be a market for it? You think it's just? Let me ask you this: Is the supply side just overmodulating? So they're taking this true crime thing, and they're trying to get as much as they can, and this is what they've drilled down to. That let's do this one.
I don't know. I don't know that maybe they're, I don't know. I don't know how this is so, is Netflix's viewing so dispersed that you're only going to get like these kind of trends in, I'm trying to think like if considering the size of Netflix's catalog, right? Like how many people simultaneously are watching, I don't know. Deep Space Nine episodes on Netflix. Is that still on Netflix US? I don't remember.
If it is, Paramount's stupid with their Paramount Plus network.
Versus, you know, whatever shows up on their new queue on Netflix. I guess what I'm saying is there's a certain class of viewer that is going to take what, like, the Night on Earth or whatever the knockoff documentary I was talking about. Nature documentary I was talking about on Netflix. People are just going to watch that because it shows up on their queue and it looks interesting. It has a nice thumbnail, right? You're going to follow the sort of YouTube algorithm approach, right? And then that makes it get onto trending because everyone else is sort of, you know, many of the users are just going there to watch old episodes of Friends or whatever, right? Or Seinfeld or whatever, you know, they're just putting something on.
Yeah. Well, I think that
it's funny. It's funny, Justin, because I've realized since the start of the pandemic, outside of one or two shows like Witcher or I was starting to get into Castlevania. I'm excited for the new series, the animated series Castlevania. There's nothing on Netflix for me. Right.
Oh, I agree.
I don't know why I have a Netflix subscription.
Well, it's because Army of the Dead comes out next month.
Yeah, it was the same thing with, you know, I had YouTube TV for sports, but now I have ESPN Plus, and it's like, okay, I can watch all the UFC on ESPN Plus, and I don't need TV subscription for that. And I mean, I guess maybe when football starts back up, I might have to bite the bullet and get another TV subscription of some kind so I can watch the games. But I mean, hopefully the bars will be open by then, and that won't be a problem. Because I'd rather enjoy the sports games at a bar with a nice big TV and a crowd than I would, you know, watching 80 bajillion commercials at home on my giant big screen and sound system. To me, that just feels so archaic to have to sit through the same damn commercial 50,000 times at home when, you know, at least at the bar, they put on music instead of playing the commercials.
Yeah, so, I mean, first of all, I agree about sports. Football is much better to watch in a bar with a bunch of other people. And that may be strange for people to hear me to say being straight edge. But the second thing is, with what you said, I agree completely that it's they put it in the new and then people watch it and then it gets trending and people watch it some more. But that also, that sort of calls into question our new model of content consumption and distribution, where it's not based on quality, it's based on clicks. And what I mean by
watch
that is
time.
It's based
on right. watch time. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's not watch time for the shows, for the content creators. It's getting the platforms as much content, as much watch time as possible. It's the platforms just want you to get addicted to their platform. So they're just hacking your brain to figure out what's going to get you to click the longest. That's all. So it's, you know, we may say the old fashioned review way of finding out what's good wasn't ideal, but it seems to me that this is even less ideal. And then the second thing that's really interesting about what you said is I agree. And I'm going to take it one step further about Netflix. You know, there's a couple of things I watch. Like I watch, for some fucking reason, I love that reality show, The Circle, on Netflix. It's just so interesting to me to watch people like try and figure each other out. And like, it's just like I loved Survivor before it went full social justice mode, right? I just love that shit. But beyond that, there's not much I watch on Netflix. And it's the same thing with Disney Plus, right? Like, I loved Muppets Now, right? That was a great show. And there's other content I watch on that, like old, you know, old Disney animated movies, a couple Iron Man movies, right? But each streaming platform, William, Amazon Prime, what do you watch on Amazon Prime besides The Expanse? And it seems to me
Grand Tour.
Grand Tour. Okay, I've heard good things about that show as well. So you watch two things. The point I'm making is it used to be each network had a couple shows you would watch and they're all available for free so you could switch between them. But now we have all these different streaming services and they all have one or two decent to good things, but you have to decide which one you're going to subscribe to. Is it almost like we're going to have to hop per month? Like, oh, this month I'm going to have Amazon Prime so I can watch The Expanse. Cancel that. Next month I'm going to watch Hulu for whatever they have. Cancel that. The next month I'm going to watch Peacock. Cancel that. The next month I'm going to have Netflix. Cancel that. The next month I'm going to have HBO Max. Cancel that. I mean, is that why? I think that's why streaming services like Amazon Prime, they're linking that to their other services, right? They're shipping. Yeah. And then HBO Max is linking that to their movies. Oh, movies are coming out every week, every month. Because it's getting to the point that you're going to have to service hop like that, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely getting to that point. To me, it's a constant trying to figure out a way to avoid commercials. Dude, I subscribe to Discovery Plus so I could watch the new episodes of Good Eats. And as soon as the new episodes stop coming out, I'll cancel, of course. But you should see the shows it keeps recommending me. Discovery Plus really wants me to get into like these crazy like reality TV shows and like, you know, History Channel like alien adventure fantasy things. I don't even know like who's watching this content.
That's what I'm wondering. And it's sort of like, well, I'm subscribed and I want something to watch, so I guess I'll just watch this. I don't know. It's insane. It's interesting.
I think a lot of these shows you're going to get a lot of these shows that have traditionally been cheap to make and Cable sort of provided a distribution for them, right? They just sort of, they fill time, and it was sort of a race to the bottom. Like, just, this is going to turn into a longer discussion, but think of how the decay of sci-fi into sci-fi, and how it was, they saw more low-risk success by making fucking Ghost Hunters than they did making Caprica, right? Caprica could have been a great show had it continued, right? It had a rocky start, but it was going somewhere. And that's very common with... Think of every good show on sci-fi. Farscape started off a little rocky and then hit its stride, right? Stargate SG-1, a little bit rocky in the first season, hit its stride, right? But rather than make that risk calculus and say, like, we're going to risk it, right, and see where it goes, it was easier to just order 37 different variations of Ghost Hunters, right? And bring WWE into sci-fi. Or sorry, pardon me, sci-fi, right?
I remember that when they had the new ECW brand. That was ridiculous.
Yeah. So this is what, you know, Discovery and all these as they move to streaming, Cooking Channel is part of the Discovery Network, I guess. All these things are struggling with is that it's easy to make this easy and relatively profitable to make this sort of banal content, right, that gets the clicks. But I think what's going to happen is you're going to have this, that you're literally run out of people that are going to watch this shit, right? What's the one of the teenage mom one or whatever? There's like 50,000 different variations of that theme, right? How many of these stories can be produced to gather enough watchers to watch them? And let's not forget the independent content creators. Think of YouTubers. YouTubers are, their production value is getting so high that they're going to be able to match these shows, if not exceed them, very soon, right? All it takes is a little bit of tweak to the YouTube algorithm, and all these shows go away, right? And they all move to YouTube.
Right, and that's the question of where we're going with that, because I had a friend in the Survivor community who once said, and this is directly related to what you just said, William. He once said that one day he believes everyone will have started in a reality show. And he was accidentally right. And what I mean by that is that's what social media is. That's what YouTube is. And you're 100% correct. A little bit of knowledge of how to edit this stuff together, a little bit of the technology getting cheaper, a little bit of knowledge of how to do the production value, and you can make these reality shows. It goes back to what I reviewed.
William, my degree from FU says you are 100% correct.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you, Justin.
Yes. What's stopping someone from making the same documentary that I just watched on Netflix? Nothing. What's stopping it from somebody from making a reality show about their own life?
I guarantee you, Justin, I know I dive deep on YouTube. YouTube, I probably watch more YouTube videos than I do anything on network TV. I guarantee you there is existing a better documentary on YouTube right now, and it probably has less than 1,000 views.
Certainly. I mean, I can tell you that the vlogs I watch about Disney, about, like, look at these old Disney animatronics. It's a 15-minute vlog on that. Oh, what are these abandoned Disney animatronics? Oh, what are the 10 most failed Disney rides? Like, those are better documentaries in 15 minutes than that Netflix video. But yes,
there's a whole series called Abandoned, which is fascinating. And yeah. Abandoned music parks, abandoned mansions in Toronto, all sorts of interesting things. Way more interesting than following some random, you know, some random crime with no point at the end, right?
Right. No point beyond, oh, drugs and violence are bad. Thank you for that. Yes, I never would have guessed. Okay, so we could spin on this topic all day, right? Instead, let's talk about some stuff that's going to come out in Trailer Takedown. I drop the trailers on Saturdays in the Discord, so if you want to watch the trailers ahead of time, head on over to our Discord channel, or you can, you know, watch them during the episode. You know, you can pause, watch, or you can do it after the episode.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Eat Wheaties is a comedy starring Tony Hale.
Tony Hale is sort of, I don't remember what his job is in the trailer, but he's sort of this, sort of our age of the millennials, like sort of the upward end of the age of the millennials, but he doesn't have a Facebook or social media or anything. And he gets chosen by his school to put together the reunion. And when he's doing it, he remembers that he was friends with Elizabeth Banks, the comedic actress who's in everything, right? So it was sort of inevitable the movie like this was going to come out involving her. And she's telling people, or he's telling people that he knows Elizabeth Banks. So then he starts a Facebook page and tries to communicate with her. And it seems like to me, William, that instead of direct messaging her, he posts on her wall for everyone to see. And then all that stuff goes viral. And it's sort of, it looks like this is a pretty funny send up of everything that's going on in our culture. So for me, I don't know if this is something I would rush out and see, but ironically, after everything we just said, if this was on like a Netflix or a streaming service and I could watch it for free, I think this could be something I watched one night. I had some free time and I didn't want to like go on a huge search if it was in the front of the algorithm. And I was like, oh yeah, you know, I remember that movie. I'll check that out. This is something I would watch. So I would give this a Netflix and hug.
Netflix and hug.
Yeah, I thought this was a clever premise, a bit of a fish out of water or, you know, digital naivete. That being said, I didn't laugh. And, you know, I have a pretty strange and eclectic bar when it comes to comedy. So if this is a comedy and that was supposed to make me laugh, then it didn't work. So I'm going to very, very lightly tackle.
Tackle. Second trailer.
Riders of Justice is the Danish version of Taken starring Mads Mikkelsen. That's not exactly Taken. In the movie, Mads Mikkelsen's wife is killed in a train bombing. Then two men show up and let him know the train bombing wasn't exactly accidental. It's left up in the air. It's undefined by the trailer whether she was collateral damage. It was the train bombing was an attempted assassination. Was she included in that? I don't know. Maybe there's going to be some mystery in this where, you know, we find out more about her past.
Or this dude, like, because this dude is pretty good for just a random dude. Maybe there's a relationship there that we're not sure about.
Right, and there's that whole trend in movies that Taken started, and when you say this dude, you mean Mads Mikkelsen's character, right?
Yeah. I didn't know right. The character's name. It was all in Danish.
Right. We'll get to that. So yeah, it's sort of like Taken started this, where they seem like a mild-mannered person, but you call them, it's like, I have a very specific set of skills. And, you know, I reviewed Nobody recently and, you know, talked about how horribly they did that premise, right, where Bob Odenkirk played an average guy who actually used to be a cleaner for the FBI or whatever. So yeah, we sort of see this premise has been done over and over again. So it does sort of run that risk. Likewise, this is a foreign language film. It's completely in Danish. I was going to say one more thing. Oh, I remember what it was. This came across in this movie as a straight drama / action movie. But when I looked it up, it's also considered a comedy. Now, there was a funny bit in there, right, about the guy who was like, I just like to put things together with the gun, and then he shot the gun really well. So there was some funny stuff. But this movie could potentially be uneven. Still, though, based upon Mads Mikkelsen, who's a fucking tremendous actor, right, and I'm sure William's going to say it, so I'm not going to say it 100%, the content of this is a hug.
Hug.
There's guns, there's explosions, there's a plot that seems to make sense, there's things I want to see where these characters go. I'm going to hug this. This looks fun.
Hug.
And that's what I knew you were going to say, William, so that's why I didn't say it.
That's right. Hey, guns and violence, dramatizing, actually motivated guns and violence, by the way. It's not just guns and violence, right? It seems like there's a motivation here, there's a story to explore, there's a mystery to unwind.
That's why Taken worked, right? And that's why the Liam Neeson movies work.
Right.
Third trailer.
Under the Stadium Lights is a football drama about a small town in Texas that tries to compete with the bigger football schools. I think it's based on a true story. I'm not sure. Now, when I first watched this, I was like, yeah, it's a football movie. I'll probably watch it. Yeah, this looks pretty good. But as I reflect on it, and as I have reflected on it, there's nothing remarkable that stands out about this. I don't remember anything about this trailer, really. There's nothing that's like, oh, yeah, that's unique. This just looks sort of like, oh, it's been, you know, 20 years since Friday Night Lights. Let's make another football movie. So I am actually going to surprise all of you, and I'm going to say Tackle.
Tackle.
Wow, what a turn of events. Justin, though, I have to agree with you. The only thing I remember is, wasn't that Lawrence Fishburne? Other than that, there was nothing in this movie that seemed interesting. It just made me think, oh man, it's been a while.
Yeah, there were a couple pretty good
actors. Yeah.
Lawrence Fishburne, somebody else. Let me look it up.
Maybe this could be something interesting, but I mean, in today's world, there's such a high risk of it just being also social justice-y, right? That you almost don't want to pollute your brain with, you know, with a football story. Take the risk of polluting your brain when there's so many good football stories out there. Yeah, it's sad because I would like this, but like you said, there's nothing really offered here that seems interesting. Maybe they're playing off the Texas references, right? Maybe there's something there that would be interesting. But they didn't show it in the trailer. But there does look like there's some good performances, at least from the trailer. And I mean if the reviews come back and it's very, audience reviews, of course, come back and it's very positive, this might be a Netflix and hug, but just based on the trailer, I'm going to lightly tackle this one as well.
Tackle.
The other actor I was thinking of is Glenn Morshower, who played Aaron on 24. And he looks tremendous as a football coach in this movie. It's like that dude was born to play a football coach. Mm-hmm. So that alone, I will say that now that I remember it was Glenn Morshower. I remember when I watched the trailer, I was like, wow, that's really good casting. Like he's delivering the lines well. And you know what? That guy is a football coach. He should play a football coach. Like to the point that I know he's a redhead, but this dude could play Bill Belichick later on. So maybe that's why I had such a positive impression the first time through.
Final trailer.
Army of the Dead is... who am I kidding? If you listen to this show, you know what Army of the Dead's about. Zack Snyder's zombie movie that's coming out. There's a zombie plague that started in Area 51 and is contained to Las Vegas. And Batista assembles a crew, and that crew goes in to try and steal $200 million. Now, this trailer itself... I'm just going to... Let's just hit the sound effect now, William.
Hug.
There we go. Okay, I'm not even going to pretend. Okay. Here's what's crazy about this trailer. This might be the best trailer I've ever seen. I can't think of a movie that I've had a more positive reaction to the trailer. I mean, it starts out with like a Hugh Axton type scene where here's Batista working in a small diner on the side of the road. And you look at this dude, he's got glasses on, he's jacked, and you're like, why is this dude working in a diner? That's a contradiction. Then they come in and this Chinese businessman, Japanese, I don't know, was he Chinese or Japanese, William?
That's, we're not supposed to ask that question, where are you from? That's insensitive. Continue.
Okay, well, an Asian businessman comes in and offers him, you know, you can have $50 million if you go steal this $200 million. And the gambler who does the gambler?
Kenny Rogers?
Yeah. That's who I thought, all right. Kenny Rogers, The Gambler by Kenny Rogers starts playing, and it fucking works perfectly for the trailer, right? Then, oh my God, you're watching the trailer, and Batista is talking to one of his old teammates, and he's basically, and this is paraphrase, he's like, remember all the times we saved all the other people? Well, look at where we are. What if for once in our lives, we just did something just for us? And that's in there, and that's intentional. That's one of the two major highlighted lines of the trailer. One of the two major highlighted lines of the trailer. That's the first one. So then you go through, this group gets together and they start going into Vegas, and you get all the shots of the zombies. And you realize that these aren't typical zombies. These are organized, they have a leader, right? And we see the leader standing on top of the Statue of Liberty, and you realize there's a lot going on. And then you see a zombie tiger, and one of the characters like, that's just crossing the line. You know that that's a meta line from Zack Snyder. That's a meta line where he is saying, like, I know people are going to say this movie's crossing the line. I know what people are going to say about my movies, but you know what? I don't care. I'm fucking going through with it. So I can't think of a bad beat in this entire trailer, and I'm going to be 100% honest. I am more excited for this movie than I was for Zack Snyder's Justice League. I'm ready to see new Snyder content, and this looks fucking amazing, and it says it's going to be a limited theatrical release. I hope they show it near me. I'm willing to drive up to 2 hours to see this in theaters. Bring it on. William?
It's only the most obvious thing.
Wow. That drop.
Yeah, pulling it deep cut for our seasoned listeners. Yeah, I liked this trailer. The only criticism I can say is the Statue of Liberty in Vegas was not wearing a mask. It is currently wearing a mask. So I'm just being facetious. I don't care about that. Let's do this. You're talking about having to travel. Think of how far I'll have to travel to see this in a theater. Hug.
That's true. You're going to have to like go to a different country. All right, that's the
I'll
end.
Fly to Ontario.
Okay, that brings us to the end of this trip. What did we learn, William?
I learned that I too can make a documentary on Netflix. All I have to do is find some uninteresting people and follow them around. Justin, what did you learn?
I learned based upon what you just said is you're going to make a mid-side documentary. That's what I learned. Self-burn!
Oh, come on now. I'll just follow the cats. That'll be way more interesting.
Yeah. I think we had a really interesting discussion about why these documentaries exist and such. I think that's what I learned this trip as well. That hopefully the free market will counter this, and hopefully we move beyond this click-based culture, right? Because the click-based culture overlaps with the whim-based culture, and that's not a good thing. That's just reinforcing it, each other. So I want to thank all of you for stopping by and listening this trip. It's always great to have you in the mid-side. Otherwise, it would just be me screaming into a microphone that's distorted for some reason this episode. So again, apologies for I don't know how that's going to sound in post. I'll check it out. I'll try and work with it. Hopefully, I'm not spending a long time editing, but we'll see what happens. Thanks to our Liberty.me listeners. We appreciate you. If you want to pick up a t-shirt, you can do so at themidside.com/store. As always, if you'd like to support us, you can do so per episode at Patreon or per month at Locals. That's themidside.com/Patreon, themidside.com/Locals. That's how we keep the lights on. And as always, the best way to help the show spread, William, is what?
Tell a friend.
Tell a friend. Please tell a friend about the show. We need to get more people who are willing to fight the power here. I do not want to be wearing a mask my whole life, and I don't want to be the only person fighting it. So at least let's all move to Florida because it's the only place that's still America. This concludes your journey into the midside. I'm Justin Emblesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a mask-free day.
So, William, I have to ask you, did my audio sound distorted at all to you?
At certain points, it did.
How bad was it?
Not very bad.
Okay, so hopefully the episode will be okay.
I think so.
All right, good. Sorry, listeners. Sorry, Midsiders.
All right, I'm going to upload and hit the road. Let me know when you want to watch the first. How do you want to do the Expanse thing? Do you want to just watch it and then record some commentary? Okay. Yep. Yeah, sounds good. Later.